Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, April 1st, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFRadio.com. That's GQFRadio.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, for chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer this beautiful Monday, April Fool's Day. Yes, I thought last night about doing some type of April Fool for all my fans and listeners, something like, hey, I just signed a contract with a show on Animal Planet. Chicken Whisperer tours the country. We're going to do coop makeovers and all kinds of stuff like that. But I was like, nah, my listeners are way too smart for that. My fans are way too smart for that. And I know the first comment once I posted that on Facebook would have been April Fool. So it's hard to pull the wool over smart folks. So I decided against it. But it is April Fool's Day, and I'm so glad you could join us today, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Hope you all had a wonderful Easter weekend with family and friends, regardless of your beliefs. So you hope you had a great weekend. We did. I guess it was back on Thursday. We really didn't decide what to do until the last minute. Sometimes that's par for the course, but me having OCD, sometimes everything has to be planned out. So I think last minute we decided to get everything all packed up and head on down to Savannah, Georgia, to visit with some of Jen's family for Easter. I know some of her sister was going to be heading down there and her parents, so we said, okay, we can do that. And then we thought, you know what? You know, we're already halfway there, over halfway there anyway, so why don't we just mosey on down to the beach and spend a little bit of time down there with the family, rest and relaxation after the stressfulness of, you know, Jen having the baby and getting everything situated at the house and everybody coming over and all that kind of stuff, which is great. But just some personal family time. So I posted a picture this morning, which was quite funny, on our Facebook page, and it was titled Roughing It. I said I told some friends that we were going to go camping for spring break with the family, and they said, well, we hope you enjoy roughing it. And I said, oh, yes, we love to rough it. And so I put laughing out loud on there and said, well, I guess it's time to go in and make some pancakes and eggs for breakfast. And had a picture of the big RV and the picnic table and the tarp with the lounge chairs and the beautiful blue sky and the palm trees above us and all that kind of stuff. And we have a lot of fun with that. So, also, Walter, I noticed Walter's in the live chat room with us today, longtime listener and fan. I don't know if you saw it, Walter, or not, but also on that Facebook page, on that Facebook post, I had put, and for my friend, for Walter up in Connecticut, it's supposed to be 81 degrees today, sunny, warm, clear, 81, with a slight breeze coming off the coast. So I posted that just for you, Walter. I gotta love it. My friend up there in Connecticut. So first let me say, if we have any technical issues, it's because we are broadcasting remotely live under the hammock of beautiful Spanish moss hanging out of the beautiful trees and all the ferns. What, isn't that what you call these, Jen? Kind of like a fern? And what do you call those fans? You open up the palm fan. Anyway, so you get the picture. It's awesome. So we're having a good time here and so glad you could join us. So wanted to let y'all know that we've got a great show lined up for today. We've got Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, who's going to be here today joining us. He's going to be finishing up his series. He's a little series on supplements, adding supplements to the water. And so we're going to finish that segment up. Adding supplements to your chicken's water. And then we're going to basically answer questions from you. If you'd like to call in, we've got several questions that have been posted on our Facebook page. And when we're done answering all of those questions for our fans, then we will call it a day. So I'll keep y'all posted on it. But, hey, I think right now, as I look at this week's schedule, there'll be 2 days that there will not be broadcasting. It looks like tomorrow, the 2nd, there will be no show. We will be here Wednesday with Garden Wise Living with Arlena. We will be here Thursday with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae. But no show on Friday. We're actually we'll be on the road, heading down the highway, looking for some action. I'll spare you the singing. Anyway, we'll be heading down the highway on the Friday, so no Friday show. But I just wanted to let you know, no show tomorrow. And no show Friday, but we're here today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. We'll be here Wednesday with Garden Wise Living with Arlena, and we'll be here Thursday with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. So So, got a great show. Was all lined up for today. Also, I'm hoping maybe even during the radio show I will be able to confirm that. I'm waiting to hear confirmation. But you know, this past Friday, Friday. This past Friday, we gave away a beautiful chicken coop valued at $800 to Amanda, who actually lives. Where did Amanda live? Can't remember now. Oh, Odessa, Texas, I think it was. Odessa, Texas. And how awesome is that? She was the lucky winner of the March Chicken Coop contest we had, sponsored by Brinsey Products, Brinsey.com. $800 chicken coop, included the coop and the run. It was absolutely fabulous. And so she was the lucky winner of that. And we're hoping, head coach, we're hoping that everything's going to pan out and I'll get all the creative juices flowing regarding a contest for April. Now, we may even start it today, if not today, tomorrow. But that's what we're looking at doing for another chicken coop. Totally unprecedented. More chicken coops than anybody on the planet. Very, very proud of that. And not a chicken coop photo contest, but actually a chicken coop contest. If we do one in April, it'll be the third one in a row. So man, we gave away two, actually, in 1 month back in October. So we love giving away chicken coops to our awesome, loyal friends and fans. So thank you very much for joining us today. Just again, reminder, no show tomorrow, but we will join you Wednesday and Thursday with some awesome guest experts in the field to share their knowledge. So gotta love it, gotta love it. And of course, today, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The questions are actually rolling in. Questions are rolling in, so gotta love that as well. So my question to you, as we're waiting for Peter Brown to actually call in today, are you getting baby chicks, actually? There's two subjects I want to talk about. Are you getting baby chicks this spring? Maybe you're adding to your existing flock. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're, maybe I'm watching that Caleb's playing in the sand here with his monster trucks and his tractor, and he's having a little fun putting sand all over his feet, so. Gotta love it. So he's having fun in the sand. So are you getting baby chicks? If you are, what kind are you getting? Are you getting something that you've always wanted? Are you getting chicks that lay specific egg color? Are you getting chicks that remind you of Grandpa's place because that's what he had? Are you getting chicks just because they had them at Tractor Supply and you walked in and said, hey, I want these chicks? So you can share with us in the chat room. What kind of baby chicks you're getting. Maybe you don't want to go down that route and get baby chicks. I understand that. Maybe you want to get started birds. Maybe you're heading out to a backyard breeder or a farm, and you're actually getting some started birds that are already to go outside. So that's fine as well. And, you know, maybe all feathered out, you know, 12 to 16 weeks old, started birds. That's good, too. Why are you getting those? Why do you choose to do those? Maybe you're hatching out some chicks right now, and you've got the incubator fired up, and you're doing the countdown, 21 days, 20 days, 19 days, 14 days, 7 days, 3 days. Oh, I can hear them, and I can see them pipping through, and maybe it's time for those baby chicks to arrive. So maybe you're doing some baby chicks as well, hatching out. Maybe you're getting chicks. Maybe you're getting started birds. Or maybe you're heading out, and you're getting some grown layers already laying, and adding them to your flock. So you can share with us why you're doing that, how you're doing that, and what kind of biosecurity practices you're actually practicing with that. You know, when you bring home chicks, our started birds, our layers, you really need to keep them quarantined for about 30 days before you start incorporating them with the existing flock to make sure they don't have any illness or disease, which includes internal parasites, external parasites, sniffling, sneezing, coughing, all that good stuff. So you want to make sure that they do not have that. So quarantine for 30 days, folks. Just a reminder, coming to you from the national spokesperson for the Biosecurity for Birds program. And so trust me. You have a beautiful existing flock, I get that, and you want to join them together and increase your flock numbers, but you may decrease your flock numbers based on deaths if you don't take the precautions and quarantine your new birds for at least 30 days to make sure they don't have any illness or disease before you join them with your current flock. It's just a good thing to do. That leads me to my next comment. I noticed someone had posted, I think it was the Chicken Pal, had posted actually on his Facebook page about the awesome chicken coop tours that are taking place all across the country. And I've been to several, actually, and Atlanta has one every year, of course, and of course out there in Austin, Texas, and there's one in Dallas, and out there, let's see what's that up there, Washington, Seattle, I think, has one, maybe Portland. So anyway, they're all over the country, and they're all very good. I'll admit, you can do a lot of education, a lot of outreach with that. However, I've been to a few, and I have never seen really good biosecurity taking place at these coop tours. And it's just something that, you know, I guess you have to pick your battles, and you have to say, oh, well, chances are. But I guess that's because you've just never lost your entire flock to illness or disease. So you can say chances are. People who have lost their entire flock to illness and disease probably aren't going to say, well, chances are. So it's all, I guess, relative when it comes to it. But, when we had the coop tour in Atlanta, I shared some tips and the importance of biosecurity from, you know, maybe the flock number one. Look at his face. So dirty. You look like 100% little boy with that dirty, dirty face. Yep. You can tell you've been playing in the sun, and in the sand, and in the dirt, and you're with your big truck all sandy and dirty. Yep. Dirty little boy. And so I shared with all the people on the coop tour about how, hey, you know, hey, it's probably not a good idea to have people walking in your run, walking in your coop, nosing around in there, you know, and keep them at a distance. They can see everything they need to see about keeping backyard chickens from a distance. I shared it with them. I shared the importance, shared the different diseases about, you know, don't bring it in, don't take it out. But I don't think a single coop owner actually participated or used those tips, whether it be booties or keeping them at bay. And it just takes one time, you know. Maybe coop number one or coop number two or coop number three on this chicken coop tour of, say, 30 coops, maybe those birds have disease and illness. And you're just letting people walk into your run and into your coop and look around, and then they get in their car and they drive to the next coop and they get out and walk through that coop and that run and then the third coop and the fourth coop all the way up to coop number 30. And they're spreading this disease with every single coop on the coop tour. And so, again, I guess you have to pick your battles and you take your chances. But like I said, you have to just, again, pick your battles. I assure you, however, that if somebody has lost their entire flock to illness and disease because of a biosecurity issue, they're not going to be saying, oh, just choose your battles. It's not a big deal because they lost 30 birds. They spent, you know, 2 or 3 years raising and then tossed and the attachment. So it's just something to be aware of that I try to share with folks. Be due diligent when it comes to coop tours and biosecurity. Unfortunately, we don't see a lot of that. But, yeah, there's coop tours. Someone was saying I hadn't heard of them, but, yeah, I know Atlanta has one. I know Austin has a big one. Dallas has one every year. I want to say it's either Portland or Seattle has one. I think there's one out in California. But there's quite a few. There's one in Chicago, I believe, not too long ago. So they're out there. There are quite a few, and I've been to quite a few. But I've never seen really good biosecurity practices done for that. And it's just basically outreach, Carly, so people who may be interested in keeping backyard poultry can come and look at your setup. Oh, I really like the design of this coop, or I like the design of that coop, or I really want to go see what this backyard chicken movement's all about. You know, I don't know if it's a bad idea or a bad idea. I know nothing about it. So it's like a home tour. A lot of cities have home tours or garden tours, and they'll open up their home, and there'll be a driving tour or a bicycle tour or a walking tour, and you'll have 20 or 30 homes on this garden tour, and you go and you pull up in their driveway or along the road and just tour their backyard and front yard and look at all the work they've done or all the work they've had somebody else do, like a landscape company, come in and do for in their yard. And I like a garden tour or home tour. You know, a realtor's having a home tour or home tour throughout Atlanta, and some of these big prestigious homes will be on tour, and you can go and tour through all these 30 homes. Same thing, coop tour, and you can go. So it's just kind of one of those things that, you know, when I was on the coop tour, you could only get so close to my setup. You could walk up and you could see plenty of my run, my coops, the way that they were designed, the whole nine yards, but you could not get into my chicken area that contained my runs and my coops, bottom line. So it's just one of those things where I think I'm concerned with when I see these coop tours all across the country. And it's... you know, again, pick your battles. It may not be necessarily if, but it may be an issue of when. So, and I hope when is a long time from now or maybe never. But when we hear folks say, oh, my gosh, all my chickens are dead now, or I have this outbreak of this, that, or the other, and I was just on this coop tour, and the folks down at coop number two, they lost all their chickens too, and now my chickens have the same symptoms. So it's just kind of one of those things. So I know a lot of breeders are very, very concerned about this, and they meet people at the driveway. They don't even let people in their backyard to see their whole operation, and they'll bring them a selection of birds out to the front, so they're not walking around and heading in their coops and all of that kind of stuff. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you as well. It was posted, and while coop tours are pretty cool, they could be a biosecurity nightmare. And like I said, it may just be a matter of when, which I hope is never, but the possibilities are there. So pick your battles. Again, it's kind of like when people say, do you get your chickens vaccinated? Someone, you know, who has had an outbreak of Marex and lost their entire flock and saw the let's face it, kind of violent death these chickens have with Marex. They're like, oh, yes, and I recommend everybody get them because I don't want you to go through what I threw. Well, I went through it. You talk with somebody who's never had a Marex outbreak or any type of illness or disease, and like, nah, I've never had a problem. So, again, I guess it's all relative to your battles type of thing, and based on your experiences, just like with life, will dictate what you recommend to others and what you do or don't do. So, but biosecurity is something I don't see too often with the chicken coop tours, unfortunately. So there's a couple of topics I wanted to talk about during host chat today. It's 20 past the hour, and it is now time for our special guest segment. Of course, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and he's going to be coming on today, and he's going to be talking all about, I think we're going to finish up supplements in your chicken's water. Do you add any supplements to your chicken's water? If you do, what, and what do you add, and why? And then after that, it probably shouldn't take too long to finish that up. And then we've got lots of folks posting questions for Peter on our Facebook page, so we'll cover those today as well. And then we'll wrap up the show. So no problem. So let's go ahead and get started with our special guest segment.
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
All righty, let's go ahead into the phone lines and we'll bring on Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. FirstStateVetSupply.com. You can go check them out. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Let's give a big, big welcome, as always, to Peter Brown. Hey,
Andy.
Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, what's going on?
Not much. Happy April Fool's to you. Hope you had a good Easter weekend with family and friends.
Yeah, I did. I did. I had a good time with family and did a few things with my grandson on Saturday.
Great.
Down, did some nature stuff and rode his bike. And down here at Chincoteague, they've got a paved loop. I don't know how many miles it is around, but closed the cars until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so pedestrians and bike riders and joggers and what have you can go out there and do some things. And so we went out on that for a while, and then observed a bald eagle and a couple of great blue herons and one huge turtle. And some ducks and some geese and stuff, and he kind of thinks, oh, that's cool. So got to do a lot there, and just a good weekend all the way around, and had some dinner with family and stuff on Sunday, and a lot of Facebook stuff going on the last couple of days since the last show, and it has been very invigorating, and anybody that wants to go and see what we were talking about, got to talk quite a few really good solid questions from the American Silky Bantam chat room, chat page, whatever they call it on Facebook, and quite interesting the questions and my responses to those questions, and we've gone over Marex numerous times here, and so I won't belabor everybody with all of those details. Because I do know there are some people that want to hear something about supplements and what have you. I don't know whether we can finish supplements, because actually it is quite a big thing, but if you've got folks that are going to ask questions, that's fine too. We can do the one segment of it now and finish it up. And you know, I'm going to start from scratch anyway. The last time we just didn't really have that much time left over by the time we got done talking about other things. But it was a real good, lively, when I say lively, good, solid questions, very, very good information put out there, and I do believe appreciated by everybody. It's the largest thread that I've ever done like that on a site that I didn't own. You know, my I generally stay away from them because of the, you know, those that want to force the issue on something that they may or may not know anything about. And that didn't happen in this particular thread, and everybody was more interested in learning, and that's the kind of group that I want to be associated with, no doubt. And it was obvious to me that these people who were reading this particular thread were as interested in, you know, the truth and what works, what doesn't work. And, you know, everything you have to take with a little bit of a grain of salt, because there are no absolutes in life other than maybe death and taxes, for sure. So, you know, those things we know. But, you know, they're, you know, when you... I think it was, what was important to me was that the depth and the breadth of the questions were quite interesting. You know, when asking about you know, the Marek's virus and how it works and those kind of things, and being able to provide the answers for that, you know, and in a fashion that hopefully were you know, explain to people that could they could understand it rather than a bunch of gobbledygook. And as always, you know, with anything I ever say, if they have a question about it and want further clarification, I'm glad to do that either from behind the scenes or whatever. So, mm-hmm. But we had a great discussion on there, and I was really pleased with, like I said, the quality of the questions and actually the amount of questions. There were. Over 100 comments to that particular thread.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so there were a lot of interested people, a lot of people wanting to know, you know, about the rumors that they've heard about this, that, and the other, and things that we've dispelled here before, tried to, and
yeah.
And you know, with any of these things, you'll never dispel the rumors 100% because somebody will always believe something different, and I'm okay with that. You know, I don't twist anybody's arm. I know what I know because of what I do, and that kind of thing, but. At any rate, you know, I had a great weekend. Hope you did with your family. And but I spent a lot of time on the computer, actually, a fair amount yesterday, and you know, just answering questions from different folks and stuff. So it was, it's always a work day for me. There are very seldom a day I take off and just completely get away from the computer and business and what have you. So, and it's probably why I always fall behind all the time too. So. But anyway, it's true, especially when I start talking.
gotta love it, gotta love it.
Well, at least I admit it, you know? Oh, God. Well, first off, vitamins are an essential compound for not only chickens and ducks and turkeys and every other living thing that I basically know of, but and humans as well, in many instances overused, in some instances underused. And so I thought we would start talking about vitamins today and talk about it from a standpoint of what it is. Vitamins are considered... you know, an organic compound that is available in the food one eats, whether it be human or animal, in basically minute amounts, not huge amounts per se. There are different feedstuffs, obviously, that have more of a particular vitamin in it than others might, but generally not overwhelming. And these vitamins... are used to maintain metabolism, growth rate, fertility, hatchability, eggshell strength, the viscosity of the yolk, the viscosity of the albumin in the egg, for embryo development, you name it, they're involved. And it's an interesting thing and I'm not going to go too far into depth into each and every aspect of this. This is a overview because it's a huge subject. You could talk for days on this and never really scratch the surface of it because there is an intertwining of one vitamin with another, And quite frankly, I don't keep all of those intertwining things off the top of my head. It's more important to me in this kind of a thing that if you get that deep in it, knowing where to go to get the information, rather than trying to store every bit of this stuff. You know, I have all the basics and that kind of thing, but as far as super-duper in-depth and everything else, then I, you know, that kind of thing, I'd pull out the book. It's not an everyday thing because vitamin deficiencies, a lot of the things that you see posted online and those kinds of things, as a general rule, on average, do not happen as much, anywhere near as much these days as they used to back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and that kind of stuff. And one of the reasons for that is they have figured out that feeding scratch grain doesn't get you very far nutrient-wise. They have figured out that the vitamins, minerals, amino acids, carbohydrates, fats, protein, and everything else need to all be there. And since the advent of a more complete feed and more stabilized vitamins within these vitamin mineral packs that are put in the feed, has made most of that go away. You know, back in the days when, I mean, America, lots of America is still rural, but most people, most places now, you know, they have a TV, they've got a telephone, they've got a car, the horse and buggy days in most places, unless you live in an Amish community or maybe somewhere else, are pretty much gone by the board. So they have access to these kinds of complete feeds, and so on. So we don't necessarily see it like we used to see it years and years ago. It was quite common years ago to have vitamin deficiencies and poor hatches and eggshells that were not good, good quality, and so on, which leads to either eggs that get broken before they're picked up for consumption, or eggs that are broken or cracked or misshapen or too thin to incubate, and that kind of thing. So, you know, the vitamins do play a very, very important role in all of these metabolic processes that are necessary for the proper rearing of poultry. So, basically, there are two groups of vitamins. I did mention this last week, but we'll go over it again now. And the water-soluble and fat-soluble is two basic groups. And basically what it means is that the fat-soluble vitamins are going to stay in the bird's and or the animal or human's body until they're needed and they're stored. Whereas the water-soluble vitamins are going to be taken in and are going to be used, and then the balance of what is not needed is going to be excreted out for the most part. So it would probably be a lot easier to get a deficiency of the B vitamins because they're not necessarily being stored. So you would probably see a deficiency of let's say riboflavin, which can cause the curly toes, before you might see a vitamin A deficiency with plaques in the eyes and that kind of stuff, okay? And that would be basically because of the, doesn't mean it won't happen, and it certainly does. I'm not saying that. What I'm trying to say here is that because of the water solubles not being stored, a day-after-day deficiency of those can lead to those other problems, and it does. We've seen it. That's one of the most common vitamin deficiencies that we see out there. So it is important. It is one vitamin technically relies on another for either synthesis of the other vitamin or to be absorbed. So when there is a deficiency of one, it can also beget a deficiency of the other because it's kind of like a traffic jam. You know, if somebody's sitting in the middle of the intersection, nobody wants to move, then we got five cars that don't go anywhere. You know, and the same thing with a vitamin. If the vitamin in any one of those intersecting places is supposed to interact with the one in the middle of the intersection and one is missing, then everything comes to a screeching halt. So it can tie up more than one vitamin. And so just be aware that, you know, that is possible. But, it is a situation where all these things are interdependent, one upon the other, for the most part. And when those deficiencies occur, and again, it's, I don't want to belabor the point, but the water-soluble vitamins much more easily become deficient than the fat-soluble vitamins. And your fat-soluble vitamins are your vitamin A, D, E, and K, and your water-soluble would be all of your B-complex, your thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, pantothenic acid, biotin, folic acid, choline, pyridoxine. Some of these have numbers. I don't think it's B12, vitamin C. I don't think it's important so much for that you know the number as you know, basically what the basic symptom would be, of a vitamin deficiency. And you can have vitamin deficiencies that are caused not necessarily by it being lacking in their feed or a poor feed stuff, poor quality feed stuff, or something like that. Diseases can do that as well. We see this many times. Birds with Marek's, they're not digesting their food. They're not getting to the food. You might be providing the highest quality food, but if they're not getting it, or if they're getting it and the Marek's is causing poor absorption through the intestinal wall, then you're going to see birds that, you know, are going to have maybe curled toes or whatever. And that, again, may be part of the Marek syndrome itself. It just depends on which nerves are being affected with the virus. Coccidiosis is another one that destroys the lining of the intestine, makes it tough for the nutrients to be absorbed. And in that case as well, you'll end up seeing birds that have vitamin deficiencies. And again, more likely, the first ones you'll probably see would be the water-soluble type vitamin deficiencies. The addition of the fat solubles to any diet, they are dependent upon the digestion of these because they're fat-based. Okay, the others absorb more readily and more easily, but the fat solubles have to be broken down. So they require the system to be up and running. When I say the system, I'm talking about the digestive system here, okay? And the because they all interact, the fat solubles do, just like fat that's being taken into the body for protein or whatever, rely on the bile from the gallbladder and the liver to break these down into usable components. So if we have a bird that is got an impaired digestive system, it's not only going to have a problem digesting the food, it's also going to have a problem digesting these and absorbing these fat-soluble vitamins as well. So in that particular case, we might be able to see some birds that don't have a good fat store, depending on how long the intestinal problem has been going on. So they can become debilitated. They start, having all kinds of abnormalities, twitching, shaking, head twisting, can't stand, leg problems, toe problems, poor feathering. We've seen it on the show where people have called in and had birds that just, should be laying, weren't laying, and it was just something. This goes back to the roadblock that I was talking about before. And we sent out some products to different people, and lo and behold, birds started laying eggs, or whatever the case may be. The other one started feathering out. Something in that bird's system, whether it be a intestinal problem that they got early on in their life or a problem that was going on right then and there, was preventing either the absorption of a mineral or a vitamin or amino acid, and allowing that feather or that egg to develop. So they're all interdependent. They all interact one upon the other. you know, some things are better than others. You know, when you start looking into these things, but worms and things like that, intestinal parasites can also cause a vitamin deficiency of almost any kind. Again, the destruction of the intestinal wall or the villi that line the intestinal wall make it tougher for the food that's breaking down in the intestine to be absorbed. And you also have to understand, too, that certain areas of the intestine have certain types of bacteria. And I plan on doing a whole show, at least, on you know, the makeup of the gut and how it's all put together. We talked about digestive system before, but I'm not talking about, you know, the location of the gizzard and the you know,
right.
pancreas and all that kind of stuff. What I would be talking about there is the use of different types of nutritional things to enhance the growth of the intestine. You know, during right after the bird is hatched, and the preceding weeks after that, because it's critically important. Because while a chick may be hatched out today at 21 days, its intestinal tract is totally immature. But we'll go through that step by step. The things that you can do to put good, healthy chicks on the ground first time, every time, and the more you do it, the better off you are. And it's not a big deal. It just depends on how you you know, you want to proceed with it. If you, you know, don't mind picking up a few dead birds here and there that appear weak or whatever, that's fine. But most of that, if not all of that, in many cases, can be prevented. And you know, when the time comes for that over the next couple 3 weeks, we'll talk about it and decide what people want to do with it. But it's a lot of information. You've heard me say too that 60-70% of the bird's immune cells lie in the intestinal tract. So a bad intestine, a bad immune system, unhealthy birds. Unhealthy birds generally don't catch up. I just want to throw that out there while we're talking about these supplements and that kind of thing. So when a bird gets behind in the beginning, whether it be from not being able to get to the food and water because the pen mates won't let him, or just unhealthy from the start, whether it be an intestinal problem, worms, coccidiosis, or any of these other abnormalities, they just never catch up. The pen mates are always bigger. The other guy is always smaller. And, you know, it's just one of those things. They just never really reach their full genetic potential. So you always have to keep that kind of stuff, you know, in the back of your mind. One of the things that I get asked a lot, and that's part of the reason why we're doing this show, is when do I supplement? When is it appropriate? So let me just say this up front as an upfront thing, and then I'll go into the rhymes and reasons why for a whole lot of other things. If it makes you feel happy and your birds are healthy, I'm okay with however you do it. And I technically don't care what you use, because sometimes you can't argue with success. But at the end of the day, it is important to look at the makeup of your basic vitamin electrolyte compound. When you get past the vitamins, basically what they're talking about when they talk about electrolytes is basically sodium and potassium. The overuse of sodium on birds, and we've gone through this before as well, is detrimental to the bird's health. Just like it is in humans, too much salt, no good for you. High blood pressure, blah, 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 right on down the road. Well, chickens, I won't say it raises high blood pressure, but what it does is it can cause right ventricular heart failure, which is leads to then what we, that's kind of like a congestive heart failure, and what we call ascites these days, the old terminology for it was water belly. And what that does is it causes a osmotic pressure differential in the bird's venous system, and then they start leaking this straw-colored fluid into the body cavity. So what you have there is a full-blown basically congestive heart failure type of a thing. The heart can't keep up. We see this in rapidly growing birds. It's more prevalent in your broilers where they're wanting to put on a lot of weight in a short period of time, and the heart has to work overtime to supply this huge body now with all the nutrients through the blood and what have you, and things start to break down. It's not overly common. Some areas of the world it's worse than others, and there are other factors involved besides just fast growth. But at any rate, the body cavity fills up with water, and they start to walk like a duck. They'll walk more upright, not quite the same as a runner duck, but fairly close. And the legs spread out, and they waddle like a duck and everything else. And so that's a tip-off. A lot of people think that's because they're egg-bound or something like that. Well, that may be in some cases. It's generally not the case when they get that bad. They would have to be putting a lot of eggs into the body cavity in order to do that. We wouldn't see it basically with an egg-bound bird, not to my knowledge. I've never seen it that way. I've always seen an internal layer dropping it, ovums or complete eggs into the body cavity, start to walk like that, legs spread out, and waddling like a duck, and more upright stance when they're walking or just standing. So, you know, it's up to you. It's your birds, your way of doing things. You many times can't argue with success, okay? But the overuse, I would never suggest, other than maybe in the summertime when we've had, you know, such blazing hot temperatures. I would suggest then that it's okay to use a vitamin electrolyte compound every day, because you're going to want those birds to retain some water, because that's the way they regulate their body temperature, by exhausting water basically out of their mouth from their body to regulate the temperature. So as they become dehydrated, then they're going to die from heat prostration. So you're better off during those times. It's acceptable to use it every day, because they're going to be drinking a lot of water. And that kind of thing. And when, as the time comes, we'll go back to a show or half a show or something on you know, what to do, you know, when the hot weather hits. I think it's a lot smarter to do it before the weather gets here and prepare for it than it is to talk about it while we're in the middle of a heat wave. But so when would you use supplements? Anytime you have birds that are confined. Whether they're totally confined to your coop, and there are folks that have those kinds of situations where they can't let them out, and they're pretty much in a coop all day long, or a small run, and that kind of thing, you might want to consider supplementation in that particular situation no more than 2 to 3 times a week, okay? And I'll give you an example. I have a client who has house chickens. They stay in the house with her, and one of her chickens, I won't mention the name because it's not right, but not her name, the bird's name. But this bird is about, in the next couple of weeks, I think, or next month or so, the bird's going to be 13 years old, thereabouts. And he's spoiled. Spoiled rotten, because the array of food that is being given to this bird to eat is not, in my opinion, okay, the way to do it. Too many treats, too many options, and when I asked the question about whether or not he was consuming a reasonable amount of his whole food, the food that you get from the feed store, the answer to that was no. And then we have to look at a situation here where the bird is getting all these other treats and not getting enough, you know, vitamins and minerals to sustain the bird long term. And you might say, well, you know, it's lived 13 years. Well, as they get older, just like we do, metabolizing some of these things from these other treats and things that he was being offered, and the problem with it is that like I said before on the show, that they home in on one thing that they like, and you can put 14 other things there, and they're going to eat the one thing they like first till it's all gone. And so what's happened with this particular situation is that the birds now develop cataracts, which might be, and I say might, it might be natural, because we have no real way of knowing, but it also might be because of a lack of vitamin A. And so, you know, I can't say definitively, but I would, I think there's a big enough nail to hang half a hat on there anyway, you know. You know, it just makes sense, you know, and sometimes you have to look at things, does it make sense or does it not make sense, you know, that this could be happening because of X, Y, Z. It's my opinion, excuse me, it is my opinion in this particular instance that it probably is coming from a lack of vitamin A for the most part. Could be a little bit of genetic old age type thing because birds do get cataracts. There's no question about that. We did a show a couple of years ago about that. And so supplementation in this particular case with this particular bird is necessary, in my opinion, to keep this bird going. He'll drink water readily with whatever's put in it. So just to give you an example, the recommendation here was the VitaPro B, which is a super great vitamin, along with Replimin liquid and some A-line amino acid concentrate. Technically, that's a fairly well-balanced diet, although in liquid form. So by doing that, we're not going to do that every day. We're going to do that about 3 days a week and see how that goes. And, you know, at the same time, you have to take into the equation here, he was dropping some weight. Not huge amounts, but still dropping some weight. So when you look at this whole thing, you know, when you supplement, I think this particular bird being confined to the home, you know, 24/7, basically. I mean, it goes out a little bit, but not not super duper, and not getting the total complete feed that he needs. That warrants supplementation. The heat that that you get in the summertime, you know, that warrants supplementation. One of the things that I wanted to talk about here about supplementation as well. Is that a lot of folks either are not aware or don't want to or for whatever the reason do not supplement their breeding stock prior to and during the collection of eggs for hatching purposes. And I've watched a lot of these things on some of the different venues here on Facebook and what have you. And excuse me. And the problem with that is that, you know, you ask a bird to do an awful lot just to lay eggs. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
About the enormous input of bodily content, vitamins, minerals, protein, amino acids, and everything else that has to go into the amount of calcium a bird just has to mobilize every day to put an eggshell down is just humongous. It's a tremendous technological feat for these birds. But by the same token, generally most of the feed that is being fed, whether you buy it at a feed store or not, is not going to be or not to have enough vitamins basically in it to augment that, to offset that. So in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of experts around the world, that are in the nutritional business, and I am not a nutritionist, but I do understand it for the most part, these birds should be supplemented. And the way I would do that is I would supplement them for 10 to 14 days before I even collected the first egg for hatching purposes. And there's no detriment to eating the eggs. These eggs... all of this is natural stuff, so there's no big deal in giving the vitamins, electrolytes, mineral compounds, that kind of stuff to birds for enhancement of the hatchability. Okay, and what that'll do for you too, generally, is you not only get more eggs as a general rule, you'll get better quality eggs better eggshells, so they will probably hatch better because the hang on one second. Got a bug in my throat here today. And they will generally hatch better because of the increased vitamins that are available. And again, those minerals and vitamins that play a role in the calcification of the eggshell will also make for a better eggshell. And we all know that incubation is the controlled loss of moisture, so a more porous shell is going to lose moisture quicker before the hatch is complete, and you stand a chance of a even if your incubation is almost perfect, that particular egg may not be able to get out of the shell because it won't have the strengths and the wherewithal to get out. So they become deadened shells and so on, or pips that don't get out, and that kind of stuff. So, and looking at it from that standpoint, it would behoove you to supplement your breeding stock with some supplements. I like, and I don't, again, I've always said on the show, I don't care where people get it, I don't care what they use. If they think something's working, that's fine. But I am a big fan of the VitaPro B, the A-Lite amino acid concentrate, and I am fans of these things, the Replimune liquid with iron, because they work, not because of hawking it or trying to sell it or whatever. They're the best of the best that I've come across in many a year. And so it's for that reason that I always recommend those. The Replimune liquid is a chelated group of trace minerals. That's all it is. And oftentimes it's one of those trace minerals that may be missing, the missing link in the process of making either an eggshell or an embryo or chicken lay eggs or whatever the case may be. So, and you get immediate uptake. It's not something that a lot of minerals, when you give them, it takes forever for the bird to even, or any animal for that matter, to even use them. Takes humongous amounts of time. So when you're trying to do these things, and time for breeders and so on is of the essence, you want to get these things done, you want the birds to get a turnaround, and you want to start hatching eggs, because once you get out of hatching season, you know, it's tough. And the later you start, the later you finish. So we always try to do that. It's always been a recommendation of mine to supplement the breeding stock with a good supplement. And like I said, I would do it for 10 to 14 days before I collected the first egg. And then after that, I do it 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and see how that goes. Generally, and we see this with older breeders too, a little tip for people who have old roosters and so on. I would put these on those older birds for the period of time, 10 to 14 days, and then 3 days a week after that. And then when you bring your either your hen to the rooster to hen, really doesn't matter, don't breed him to death. Put him in there, watch him go around and mate with the gals, and after he's done it a couple times, take him out and go make him rest. Bring him back in the afternoon, put him back in there, let him do his business, take him out. Done for the day. And I think that you'll find that you'll get a lot more longevity out of that type of a situation with the rooster, instead of going in there and wearing himself out, trying to mate multiple times with somebody he's already mated with, and that kind of thing. If they're mating once or twice, should be sufficient. And we've been pretty successful, and I say we, that recommendation to people who have had birds that are 12, 13, 14 years old that they still want to get some biddies from. So it all depends. Depends on you yourself. Depends on what you want to do. Depends on all of these different parameters. And again, it is up to the individual. Another time when you'll want to to supplement birds would be times of stress. Stress can be almost anything. We've talked about that on the show as well, where we've talked about the corticosteroids that are put off by birds when they're in that fight or flight situation, and how it debilitates the immune system so that it's not functioning up to par and makes birds more susceptible to disease and so on. Well, if they're in that fight or flight situation and the corticosteroids are being produced and they're not eating either, They'll drink before they'll eat as a general rule, so you're better off to have something in the water when you know these types of situations are coming about. Breeding is a stress, so it behooves you to put something in to help a bird. Sometimes roosters won't even eat; they're so busy wanting to go around and breed all the gals that they do not eat the same as they would if they were just not out there having access to all the females. So all of these particular situations, stress is a big one. Stress comes in many forms. Just moving them around the yard can be a stress for them. It depends on how well your birds are handled. Some people, each and every bird will come up to them and they can pick each one up and put them down and it's no big deal. Other people, if you approach the birds, they run like crazy and that kind of stuff. Yeah, they do. And that in itself creates a stress right there. And so all of these things, predators, thunderstorms, hot weather, cold weather, all of it's a stress. And so during those times, and I know there's probably somebody out there saying, well, hell, that could be all day, every day. Well, not necessarily. You have to pick and choose where you're going to do it, what's going to be most beneficial to everybody, how much time you've got to do it. You want to keep the water clean, so it's a matter of putting it out. And here's another tip for everybody. You've got a 5-gallon water that you're using to water your birds, and they drink about 3 gallons a day. Well, don't mix up 5 gallons every day if you need to change it every day. If you're not changing your water every day, that's up to you. But if you're putting supplements in it, you're going to want to do that. So, put 3 gallons in, and if they're out of water just before they go to roost, who cares? They're not going to drink anyway. And make sure you're out there first thing in the morning and put fresh water and supplements in there, and that way you can save yourself a lot of money. Same thing with using antibiotics and medications that go in the drinking water, I would always cut down the amount that I put out at any given time, and if you need more, put more. If they're drinking more, put more, but don't give them 10 gallons of water when they're going to drink 5. It's just not economically wise. But the other time when I would definitely supplement would be times when we have a disease going on. Some diseases, and particularly coccidiosis, I would choose to use a supplement after the incident rather than during. And one of the reasons for that is that if you're using Ampril or Coryd, whichever one you choose to use, that is considered not necessarily a drug. It's an antagonist, and by that it ties up the thymine, which is a B vitamin, vitamin B1, if my memory serves it correctly. And because it ties up the thymine, you're going to want to replace that afterward, but it's not a good idea to try to replace it during the event because of the fact that that makes the bird have more access, or the oocysts that are causing the coccidiosis actually to have more access to thymine, and makes it tougher for the amprolium or Coryd to work. So during that particular incident, I would not use a vitamin supplement in the water. So I would steer away from it during that particular time. Andy, did you want to take a break? It's almost 8 after
I
the
did,
hour.
And also I wanted to see if you have enough information left to do a two-part and come back next Monday. I had reached out to a lot of our fans on Facebook and had them today. We were going to do the supplements as well as answer some questions from our listeners. So,
yeah, why don't we do this? When we come back, I just want to go over one more thing there, and then we'll go into the actual vitamins themselves and what symptoms of deficiency are next week. We'll finish it up.
That sounds great.
That way you can take calls, after. So it shouldn't take me more than 3 to 5 minutes when I come back.
That sounds great. That's perfect. We will do that. So, folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State VetSupply.com. We've been talking about vitamins and electrolytes and adding supplements to your chicken's water. And we come back, where I'll wrap that up, at least this part of that topic, and then we'll be taking some questions that have posted on our Facebook page all morning. So stay with us. We'll be back with the Chicken Doctor right after this short break.
You need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today, this Monday episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And, of course, it is April Fool's Day, so we've got Peter Brown, also known as Chicken Doctor, going to wrap up here at least this segment of vitamins and electrolytes and supplements in the water, and then we'll take some questions that have been posted on our Facebook page. So, Peter, I'll turn it over to you to kind of wrap that up.
Yeah, the other is, the environmental conditions. If we go back and we look at birds that are confined, the type of air they're breathing may not seem like it to some people, but, the type of air that a bird is breathing, when I say the type, the condition of that air, the more ammonia that might be in it, the more pathogens that might be in it, certainly then serve as a stress. And it's during those times there that you want to basically give some supplementation. Anytime a bird is off feed, off water, supplement in any way you can. Sometimes, tube feeding you certainly wouldn't want to tube feed a whole flock, but on an individual bird basis, that may be indicated depending on what's going on. So, I just wanted to touch base on those things because people ask me all the time, when do I supplement? When do I supplement? Everybody has their own. There's some that never do it and they're happy with the way their flock is going. And far be it from me to say, hey, you should be supplementing your flock. you know, you can't, again, you can't argue with success. But I will say on the other side of the fence that sometimes if you're looking at a car on a car lot and all of the cars have dents, and you buy one with a dent, it's accepted. But if you go to another car lot and all the cars there are all nice and shiny, no dents, no rust or anything else, then it becomes a whole different world. So it just depends on what you're seeing through the glasses that you're looking through. And everybody has a different take on that. And I don't have any argument or issue with that. You have to do with whatever's good for you and your flock as far as supplementation is concerned. I am more interested in situations where people have gotten themselves into a problem or the flock is in some sort of a problem, and my whole goal all the time is to try to help people get out of that situation and get that situation fixed so that the birds are healthy. At the end of the day, it's always, for me, basically about the birds. And how can we get them out of the hole they're in and get them up and going? And we've been able to do that in the last couple of weeks. We've had a couple of instances where folks have asked me for assistance and directed them how to do that. For me, it makes my day. I don't know about anybody else, but I get excited. I could take the whole day off. I don't care. It's just how great I feel after being able to pull either one bird through or a flock or whatever it is, or helping somebody get past something. I've seen somebody here recently struggling with a particular situation. I won't mention it because somebody might pick out who it is, and it's not my intent. And, I didn't feel it was fair for me to go out openly and offer my assistance. I went behind the scenes and offered it. And the person has done that. And it was a funny thing because there's a thing on Facebook about what I've contributed to the site and what have you to this particular one, and this particular individual came back and actually wanted to pay me for the advice that I had given. And then I went on and I explained to people what it's all about, what the consultation fee is about. It's not designed to take your money. That's not what it's about. And so it just, it's been really great. It's been one of the few times over all the years I've been doing this stuff online or not, that I've had an opportunity to really reach what I felt was a lot of people with a lot of issues and have some of those turn out to be successful. And, to me, that's what it's all about. It has nothing to do other than, don't get me wrong, it's not that I don't like the people at home. It's got nothing to do with it. It's just that my whole life has been around fixing the bird. It's kind of like a mechanic that's a nut for cars and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. It's the same difference. Just we're talking about chickens versus cars. It's the only difference. And
exactly.
I enjoy it, and to it's what I do. It's what I chose to do.
You're the man. I think you're one of the best things
I've
ever had.
I do appreciate that accolade. I do appreciate that accolade, and I work hard at it. One of the things on there was somebody had said that I'll just give you a quick thing. They said, maybe all of them on that particular site should patronize me with my store and stuff. And I certainly appreciate that, no question about that. And, somebody else said, maybe a dollar or two higher than somebody else. But go ask somebody else how to do this, that, and the other, like I have done, been there, and they're right. And I agree. And I truly, truly appreciate that because that's what needed to be said without me saying it.
Yeah. Look at the directions you get with every product you buy.
Yeah, do I know everything? Hell no. I learn every day. That's why I do this. It's eat, sleep, and drink it. I'm always buying a book somewhere to learn something and what have you. But, and so I went on to explain that, I never set out to be the cheapest nor the most expensive. Never. My only goal when I started this thing was to be the best at what I do, and I truly feel that I am the best at what I do. And, there may be other people that may know more stuff. I don't know. I enjoy what I do, and I don't try to impose what I know on somebody else, except when somebody's putting out some bogus stuff, then I'm going to step on it. That's just how I feel about it, and put put out what is the truth, whether you want to believe it or not. That's okay. Force nothing on anybody. If you know look, the more information we have as a group collectively, the better off we're going to be, every one of us. That's you, me, your listening audience, the people on Facebook, everywhere. Because armed with the truth about a particular situation, that's how you fix it.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that's just the way you fix it. You know, it's just, you know, for me, it's a tremendous thing. So anyway, you've got
hopefully
questions,
we'll,
or you want to move on to something
we'll
else?
Yeah. Hopefully we'll fix some problems. So right now, the first one doesn't necessarily, well, it has to do with our birds and our personal health as bird keepers, if
okay.
you will. Actually wants to know, she said, Andy, I would love to know if you could point me in the direction of helpful information you have shared about preventing histoplasmosis. It is something I have become a little concerned about recently. And so maybe you could touch a little bit on that, the histoplasmosis and Ashley's recent concern about that.
I wonder where her concern comes from.
I have no idea. Another fan had posted some information in general about it at a website. It just gave some tips and things like that, what it is and things like that, but no other comments than just saying, here, check out this website. So since I just thought,
well,
you've had that, you've been around birds all your life, you've worked in the commercial industry as well, so just your two cents would be appreciative as well.
Well, what I would say, I personally have not had any experience with histoplasmosis. I will say this, we've talked about different things on the show before. We've talked about aspergillosis, okay,
mm-hmm.
Which would give you a histoplasmosis type of a situation. It's a fungal infection of the bird's lungs, and therefore contagious to humans as well. So you know, it would that would be a problem. So I mean, if they're worried about it, I would suggest that you never put hay or straw in your coop. And that you know, you look at every respiratory issue that a bird has, and try to find out, you know, what's going on as best you can. I mean, histoplasmosis can be gotten from anywhere. I'm just trying to think here. Favus is another one. Okay, and you can get favus internally as well, and it's another you know, fungal deal. So the pigeon people, and I'm not sure exactly what causes pigeon lung, but people who see, they're great for going in and cleaning their loft religiously daily. Okay, they got dropping boards, and they scrape them down. They scrape the floor. And I know quite a few of them that even do this. They have a propane torch. They torch the floor to kill all the. It's crazy. And in the course of doing all of that, again, this goes back to vitamin supplementation and environmental conditions and everything else. You stir up all the stuff, then your birds breathe, and then you wonder why they're sick. So, if there is a concern by this individual, I would suggest that any time she is either around the poultry or certainly in a cleaning mode, cleaning, dusting, blowing down dust, whatever it is she's doing, that it may be appropriate to wear eyewear that keeps dust and dirt out, and also a mask that would do the same thing, a filter-type mask. I would, you know, a great place for a lot of information about a lot of different things, the Centers for Disease Control has sites that, or on their site, they have information about all these types of different things. So it is a possibility. You know, I had in 2007, I had a rough bout with acid reflux, and I was temporarily hospitalized, and, you know, they did a chest x-ray thing and then a CT scan and all that stuff, and they came up with some spots on my lungs. And, you know, the feeling was that they probably had been there forever. And then I was asked
if I was around a lot of birds, and certainly I was. Right. Early part of my career, up to my eyeballs in dirt and dust from chickens. So, you know, something there could possibly be down in my lung. And what we did was for 2 years, I had a CT scan every 6 months. And what they were doing then was measuring to make sure that those were not growing, and they weren't. And so after 2 years, we left it alone. But so, yeah, there's a reasonable concern. I don't think I'd jump off the bridge about it. But it's about all I can offer about it. I've never had to deal with it directly. I've heard of people claiming that they got it from turkeys, that kind of thing, but no personal experience myself.
All right. We've got from Elijah, I have a question. Why my chickens' combs bleed? They don't peck one another, they just bleed. Could it be dry skin?
Very interesting. I don't think dry skin would be, I mean, that may be an effect of something else. It's possible. I think what I would do there is probably try some vitamin supplementation because and it depends on what's making them bleed. You know, are they, you know, sticking their head in a place where the comb is getting caught? I mean, there are birds that have huge comb and wattles, so I don't know, you know, the breed or how big they are. But if they are you know, catching them. I'd like to know more about this before I could give any kind of you know, reasonable, definitive answer. But, you know, I've seen it before where birds catch themselves and the comb bleeds and they get that black scab on there and, you know, we think it's pox and that kind
of thing.
Yeah. you know, I can tell you for myself, I don't take an actual blood thinner. I take a blood platelet thinner. It's designed to keep the platelets of my blood from sticking to my stent. And, I believe it's a drop of a hat. I mean, the other day I was getting out of my van, well, 2 weeks ago I was getting out of my van, and I was faster than the door was opening, getting out, and on the armrest, I banged the lower part of my knee, and I've got about a one-inch long place there where it just took the skin right off, and normally I wouldn't do that. And you bleed funny too. It's like the blood stacks up on itself instead of running. Depends on where it is. If I nick a finger, it'll bleed, and it'll run out fairly decently. But almost anywhere else, especially on my legs and stuff, the blood stacks up on itself almost like a ice cream cone. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look at, you know, it's a possibility that with a vitamin K deficiency certainly would lead to birds that were more susceptible. A biotin deficiency would lead to cracked skin and that kind of thing. It'd be interesting to see what kind of things that a person would be feeding. If you're feeding raw eggs back to the birds, that would tie up biotin. And I think don't quote me on this. I can't remember. This is another memory block here, but Flavidin or something like that is in the eggs that will tie up the biotin, and that would cause bleeding very readily and easily and cracked skin and that kind of thing. So I would take a look at it and see if I could, number one, find out where they're hurting themselves to make themselves bleed. I think that would be my first way of looking at this. And then secondly, possibly trying some supplements to see if that mitigates the situation, and you know, I think that's the best approach for it.
How would he go about treating this if he has a specific wound or he sees a spot that is actively bleeding? How would he go about treating that bird comb?
I would just put some triple antibiotic ointment on it. I mean, if it's bleeding, you're going to want to apply some pressure to it until it does stop bleeding. Some blood stop powder is fine. It just depends on the rate of blood flow. If you remember when we did several weeks back, we did that whole show or so on the bird's comb.
Yep.
You're looking at an organ, and it is an organ, folks, of a bird that is highly vascularized with all kinds of blood vessels from arteries to veins to what we call vesicles to capillary blood vessels, and they're anywhere and everywhere in that thing. So, I mean, pick a spot and it's going to bleed. Period. What would concern me with it is the ease of bleeding. You know what I'm saying? Would lead me to believe that there's something deficient somewhere. So, again, if the comb is bleeding profusely and you can't stop it by pressure and you can't stop it by blood stop powder and that kind of thing, then the only other alternative right off the bat would be to cauterize it, and that should only take a second with any type of quartering device that you want to use, whether it be the tip of a hot knife or these woodworking tools work real good for that. Just all you got to do is touch it and pull up. Momentary touch until it stops. You never hold it on there and watch it burn. You just touch, just like a doctor would use in surgery with a laser cauterizer. He doesn't he doesn't set the whole room on fire. He just wants to, you know, get the blood to stop. So that's how I would approach that.
Okay. Let's see. Serena has, her chicken, low-hanging, soft abdomen on a one-year-old hen who is laying, eating, pooping, and acting normal in every way. Any ideas regarding the low-hanging, soft abdomen?
Could be just body fat. And from the end of the keel bone to the vent is an open area where there really isn't anything to protect body organs except body fat. It could be just body fat. I would also be cautious about
hernia?
No, not really. Not okay. To my knowledge. I would be concerned about the bird, laying eggs in the body cavity. That I would be concerned about. Just because the bird is laying doesn't mean that she's not dumping one every now and then in the body cavity. So that's an issue. And it may be just nothing. Maybe just body fat, which is hard to determine. But I would palpate the area. In other words, take my hand and just gently apply some pressure to it all around, in and out, and see if you can feel anything there at all. And I'd keep a close eye on her. Certainly, ascites comes to mind, but I can't see why. That's another thing. Did she say how old the bird was?
She did not. She did. 1 year old.
1 year old. Okay. Yeah, you wouldn't really expect to see ascites. You would expect possibly, a 1 year old bird a little bit more susceptible to the internal laying thing than a 2 year old bird might be. As they come into lay, the hormones get out of balance and they start having problems getting the ovum to drop into the beginning of the infundibulum, the oviduct. So I would just probably keep an eye on it, but it just could be body fat. And that's hard to say. If they're being fed a lot of treats, a lot of extra stuff over and above their feed, I would probably knock some of that off, if not all of it.
Very good. One last one on this thread here, then we'll go to the other. I need help getting rid of tapeworm. This is Paige Moe. I need help getting rid of tapeworm.
Okay. Well, if she truly has tapeworms, and tapeworms be flat and serrated, appear in the droppings initially very small like rice, very similar to if you've ever seen one in a dog. It's the same look. Almost semi-transparent in the beginning to an opaquish white, can grow in length fairly long. The length is not important. So if you truly have tapeworms distinctive from roundworms. Roundworms are round, opaquish white, can be almost any length, 6, 7, 8 inches or more. Look like spaghetti. So if she truly feels like she has tapeworms, The valbazin would be your best bet. 1 cc of valbazin to 8 cc of water, 2 cc down the throat. Repeat it in 10 days. Become a poop inspector to watch for the the expulsion of the tapeworms and or their eggs in the droppings. The problem with the tapeworm is that if you don't get the scolex out, which is the mouth part where they attach themselves to the intestinal wall, then it's useless. And that's why you're going to want to come back in 10 days and do it again. There shouldn't be any detriment to the bird at all doing this. We've been doing this with this particular product now for at least 15-plus years, and there's not, to my knowledge, been any problem. If you're eating the eggs, you're on your own. You'll decide what you want to do with that. But as far as the tapeworms are concerned, that is one of the best products to do that for, and you should be successful and do it. Might take multiple wormings because they're tough to get rid of. But that's the approach that I would take, and I would certainly, before I embarked on that, make very sure that I was dealing with tapeworms and not roundworms. But if that's the case, then this is the way to go. We'll work for either worm, but I prefer the piperazine-based Wazine product for roundworms. A lot easier to use. Just dump in the drinking water if that's the case. I would probably, at some point in time, do a worming for the roundworms anyway.
Sounds good. Linda has one. This is the season too. A lot of people are getting started with backyard poultry. Mm-hmm. This may be a loaded question, but what are three items one should have if you're new to raising chickens? She asked for three things. Three items one should have if you're new to raising chickens.
Well, the certainly something for a respiratory issue. You know, a lot of people like to call it a cold. It's not. It's caused by a particular disease organism, as a general rule. I would say that a good probiotic and a good vitamin supplement. At least those three, because either way, if you've got issues with egg laying, you've got something to help you with the vitamins and or the respiratory medication. If you have a respiratory issue, you've got that. I don't know if three really answers the question. That, you know,
right.
depends on what we're going to do for coccidiosis, because none of those three items would help with that in any way, shape, or form.
I guess one item could be the emergency medicine kit, which has a lot of different things.
I would
a first aid kit, mm-hmm. and then your phone number.
Yeah, and the emergency medication kit, while at $24.95, $25, might sound like a lot. If you had a problem with coccy, you got two different options in there to take care of it. So if one doesn't work, the other should, and they would be your only basic two options for that. You've got a respiratory medication in there, and you could opt to use. Like, for instance, sulfadimethoxine being part of that case, so that would work for coccy. The Ampro would work for coccy, but the sulfadimethoxine would work for some of the respiratory issues, so you could team that up with the Oxytet that's in there and treat either the two of them together, which I don't necessarily recommend because I don't think you need that much, but you could extend out. You could use the sulfadimethoxine for 5 days, come back with the Oxytet for 10 days, and get yourself out of a respiratory issue. You've got a probiotic in there. You've got turmeric in there to boost the immune system, however you want to do that. You've got the VitaPro B in there for the vitamins, the Replimin liquid in there for helping with feather growth and other abnormalities, feathers and hatchability and eggshell strength and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you would easily spend, at least in my store, you would spend about $40 for the three items, whereas you would spend $25 for the others, and everything is going to come with directions, and even the kit comes with the a symptomology page as well to tell you what symptoms of worms and coccidiosis and respiratory issues would be, and then what you could use and how much of each to use to help mitigate those circumstances. So it has a lot of value other than just, you know, going out and getting three items. We've done fairly well with the kits. They kind of tailed off a little bit, but that's to be expected. But we've got others we're working on. It's just a matter of time, and you know, those will be out hopefully by summer. But that's what I would consider doing. Otherwise, you're going to need four items because you're not going to be able to get by with the three. So then you're going to need either Ampril or sulfadimethoxine to go along with that you know, that particular situation. And, you know, people need to bear in mind that the emergency med kit was designed to let you have something on hand to get started with treating your bird or birds so that you can get whatever else it is that you may need or more of it rather than have a ton of it sitting around and it all expires on you and you got to throw it away. So, you know, it, to me it's a valuable tool for a person to have sitting on the shelf. If you never have to use it, it'll be the best 25 bucks you've ever spent. I know a lot of people don't look at it that way because they think it's 25 bucks wasted. Not necessarily so. I don't know how many times. I mean, the way it was developed was because of the people that listened to this show. Number one, they asked for it. Number two, 99.9% of the time when somebody either emails me or calls me and I say to them, what do you have on hand? The ultimate answer is nothing. And that's why this kit was designed. So, you know, hopefully it'll help the person out.
Perfect. Yeah, great advice there, speaker. Here's one that yeah, I wouldn't say a little lengthy, but lots of information here. I have a buff Orpington that in the last 4 days has come up with a bit of crooked neck and at times won't get off the roost on her own. Time to time, she walks in a circle, but otherwise eats and drinks like normal, frame ranges like normal. It seems like it may be her eyesight, but then I also read a bit about wryneck. I want to do the best for her, but she's young. She's about 20 weeks of age. She's about 20 weeks of age, and I bought her when she was 14 weeks from a hatchery. So I guess here's the crook neck, and sometimes won't get off the roost on her own, walks in circles. I think that's the three main information that we got here.
Okay. Well, it seems to me, you know, the accuracy of the information there, I'm not sure. And from the standpoint that if I'm reading it right, what I'm getting at, or listening to it right, what I'm getting out of it is that there are times when a bird seems to act normal, and there are other times when it doesn't want to get off the roost, and there are other times when it walks in circles, and there are other times when it goes out and it forages normally. That's what I got out of that. So,
okay.
That being said, that's pretty tough to put your finger on and say, aha, it's this, it's that.
Right.
The twisting of the neck 99.9% of the time is going to be neurological. Now, whether or not that is a vitamin deficiency, whether that is a mild form of Newcastle, whether that is a mild form of some of the neurological type of Merrick's, is extremely hard to say.
Right.
You know, I don't think anybody could you know, just put their finger on it and say, aha, that's what it is. So what I would do, is I would supplement this bird with some vitamins, and I would probably look to stick to the fat soluble group because that's probably where this lies, either the A, D, and E, more so than the water solubles, the B complex, and so on. So I would probably look to do that. You can do that fairly easily. You can go to the health food store and get some vitamin E capsules and an A and D tablet or whatever. And for the E, you want about 400 international units, and they'll say that on it, 400 IU. And you know, you want something along those lines. For the vitamin A and D, hang on a second. I'll tell you. I got a bottle of it right here. You want 5,000 international units of A. And 400 international units of D. And you might go to a health food store. All of these things for humans are all created not equal. You know, so if you go there and they've got a 4,000 with a 300, take it. You know, don't hold out and drive yourself crazy driving around to every store within 100 miles of you trying to find exactly what I'm saying. As close as you can get to that. I would also take and give this bird a Bayer brand baby aspirin 2 to 3 times a day and see if that doesn't help with this particular situation and pull this bird around. If after like 2 weeks we're not getting anywhere, I would opt then to change the therapy up to giving this bird the Bayer brand baby aspirin 3 times a day, and at least twice a day the curcumin potentiated with bioperine. You'll have to go to the health food store, and it can have piperine, P-I-P-E-R-I-N-E, or bioperine, B-I-O-P-E-R-I-N-E, in it. And this will potentiate the, what that means is it'll make it absorb better, okay? So the curcumin and stuff by itself, while it is good, it is much better when it is potentiated with the piperine or the bioperine, so that the uptake of the curcumin through the intestinal wall, where it's going to do the most good for the bird, is going to be greater. So you want something as close to the two in combination of 1,000 milligrams, okay? Recently I helped somebody with a bird that couldn't stand that had this particular problem, and we put them on this particular thing, and the bird is up and walking about and acting normally now. So, you know, you run about maybe a 60%, 40% chance it'll work, 60 it will, 40 it won't, and maybe it'll be 50-50, it just depends. They may never get better, it just depends, but this is the only thing that I know of that has been successful in the past, and I would do that 1,000 milligrams of that product anywhere from 2 to 3 times a day. The bigger the bird, the more I'd give. You can't hurt them with it. You can't overload them with it. And it's not going to be any kind of problem. As far as the A and D and the E, give one of those each per day and then just see how it goes. The other thing that I would do with this bird, because we're seeing more and more of this as well, and I think this warrants being put out there too, because this could be just plain old neurological, and this could be being caused by an ear infection. We're seeing more and more and more and more of it. Don't know where it's all coming from, but it's out there. And you just need to get a focus beam flashlight, somebody to help you hold the bird, hold the head steady, open the ear canal up, and look and see if there's anything in the ear canal at all. You'll know it when you see it. It's a yellow to orange yellow mass. In some birds, it grows right out of the ear. It grows pretty big. I've actually got some fantastic photos of some of these things. It just blow your mind that these things can grow out of a chicken's ear. The ear hole's about the size of a pencil, and I've got one that's it's got this thing growing out of its ear the size of a quarter, and it was a silky boot. So, you know, they do, you know, and that has got a really nasty bacteria in it, and if that's the case and you do find that, you want to make sure that you handle any of that material with gloves on, and you want to dispose of it in the trash so that nobody else has access to it. And generally what we'll use for that ear, it would be Otomax and amoxicillin, or Otomax and cephalexin. Any one of those should work for that particular thing. But they need that, they can get a hold of me. You know, we'll take care of that part of it. But that's what I would do with this particular bird. It's an anomaly that you can't put your finger on and say, aha, that's what it is. So this is the approach you have to take to it, and it's time-consuming. And like I say, about a 50-50 chance of having it be successful. The bird may never recover any different than that, and as long as she doesn't get any worse, it's not a big deal.
Kathleen asks, I have old English game bantam roosters. Why do I have to dub them to show them?
Well, that's the rules. You know, I mean, that is a standard of what we call a standard of perfection. If you, and I do not know this to be truth, but I would just say, being a game bantam, then they are mimicking the adult game fowl, which are all dubbed, okay? And I mean that's the rule. It's kind of like showing a dog. You know, why do they you know, why do they make you walk in a stupid circle? You know, that's the way they show the dogs. You know, I mean, and they have, you know, everybody, you know, they have a fault or whatever. That's what the show stuff is all about. So It's whoever started the that particular breed and got it started in the breed standard. That was one of the specifications for it. So it's kind of like, you know, having a driver's license. You know, why do we have that? You know, we have it, you know, because everybody wants to make sure he can drive a car, hopefully. So it's kind of like the same thing, and it's kind of like the rule book. And the rule book says you'll dub them. If you're not showing them, I don't see why you just leave it alone. That's my, you know, my interpretation. But that, it is because of the it's a rule that you have to have them if you're going to show them. If you're not showing them, it doesn't matter. Still a good question, though.
We've got, let's see, one, maybe two more here. We've heard this type of thing that happens a lot. I have a chicken that was attacked by a raccoon. She was attacked in her face and one of her eyes. Now, it's been 2 weeks since the attack. No infection, but the eye is still closed. Any thoughts? Also, I only have two hens, by the way, and the non-injured hen is now attacking her if I let them roam together. So we've heard that a lot. Other birds love to pick on the weaker bird or weaker birds that have been shown illness, weakness, trauma, injury. They like to pick the red, the scab, things like that,
yep.
And they just pick on the weaker bird. But I guess the main medical issue here is that the injured eye is still closed and not opening.
Well, it depends on, you know, I can only
right.
from eyes, you know, what's going on. So I will go from my position here, surmising what is happening. But generally, I can't, there may be some injury directly to the facial muscles of the eye. I don't know. Raccoons are pretty nasty. I've seen, you know, I've got pictures here where, one was attacked by a raccoon and just ripped the beak completely out. There's no beak up or lower, none, period, gone. And so, you know, in those kinds of situations, you know, when you get the damage to the muscles and the blood vessels that go through there, there's a major artery that runs along the bottom part of that beak and all under the face there. So, the muscle and or nerves, or there may be some damage to the eye. I would opt for opening the eye manually. If it's stuck shut, some warm Epsom salt water applied over the eye, and keep with a cotton ball and just keep going back and forth until you get it open. Sometimes you might have to help it open. But I would get that open, because lack of oxygen to the eye on a daily basis for a long period of time, even if the eye were good, could allow the eye to the bird to go blind in that eye. So you can get, you know, eye damage from that way, even if it wasn't done by the raccoon. So I would open the eye, I would get some eye ointment, put it in there. She didn't, or he, or whoever, didn't say anything about whether or not there was or wasn't any swelling. If there's still swelling in the facial area, that may be part of the reason. Because I've seen them swollen so bad that you think that you're never going to get this stuff out of their eyes. If there is, and you look, and even if you get the eye open, you look and it doesn't even look like there's an eyeball there. The conjunctiva and the tissue around the eye is so swollen, due to the injury and stuff. So I would look to do that. They can always, you know, get a hold of me, you know, at chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com, and a picture tells 1,000 words, and I might be able to give a little bit better advice based on a picture of what's going on there. But I would certainly look to put an antibiotic ointment in the eye, and if it's swollen, I would get one that has dexamethasone in it, so it'll help bring that swelling down, and maybe that bird will recover in that eye. As far as the other bird picking, keep the two apart, because they will do that, and the one will pick the other one to death, basically. I mean, it's just human nature. That's the way they are. Survival of the fittest. It's still an instinct. Goes back to the wild jungle fowl. So that's just part of their gig. That's what they do. Some birds are more aggressive than others. I've seen roosters take a hen that was injured and just nurture her and bring her food, and I've seen others want to tear them apart. So it's just just depends on the bird, the breed, and that kind of thing. So.
Sounds good. Lots of great information. We're going to call it a day here, and we appreciate you coming on, Peter, as always, every Monday. Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, founder of First State Vet Supply. You talked quite a bit about some products today that he carries at his website, firststatevetsupply.com. We'll help you check them out and see what they got that you definitely need, or contact them off the air. If we didn't quite get to your question today or you have a little bit more detailed information, you can contact him again, as he stated, chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. And, Doc, we appreciate you joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next Monday, and wishing you all the best.
My pleasure, and we'll finish this this thing up next week. Shouldn't have all that much more to go, but I want to talk about minerals a little bit and then some about amino acids, and we'll get off of it and go on to something else.
That sounds like a plan. Well, we appreciate it.
I want to let everybody know, Andy, too. I should have sent you an email, too, here, but within 2 to 3 weeks, I will be doing a show about more organic stuff. I will have a fair amount to say about organic supplements that work, some preventative measures that people can take from an organic standpoint, because I know there's a whole lot of folks out there that are interested in the organic side of this thing, as I am, and actually in my own situation here very shortly we'll be experimenting with a whole lot of different things on the organic side, and we'll be passing all that information along. But I have a fair amount of stuff that I've accumulated over the last several years and beyond that is worth putting out here for people to see what they can do, pasture management and that kind of stuff, and how you can manage your pasture to have a more organic setting and so on, and help your birds with their health that way. So everybody keep tuned for Andy's announcements and stuff on that, and we'll try to get that on the air just as quick as we can.
A lot of people are interested in that, so that'll be super information for all of our listeners. So thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next Monday.
We'll see you, Andy. Thanks.
All right. Hey, thank you so much. You take care and stay healthy. That's Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Please visit him online, firststatevetsupply.com, especially if you're interested in that emergency medicine kit that we were talking about. Great to have on hand. Like you said, when people call him, they're in a bind. They've got ill, sick, injured chickens, and you heard Peter. Now he said, okay, now tell me, let's get start this. I know what we need to do. Let me tell you what you have. And he says, 9 times out of 10, the answer is nothing. Okay, so you have nothing. So go ahead, and that would be a good start, adding his emergency medicine kit to your chicken first aid kit. It's going to wrap up another great show, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Reminder, no show tomorrow, but we will return Wednesday with Garden Wise Living with Arlena, Thursday with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, and no show on Friday because we'll be on the road. But the three shows we'll have this week, great educational information about your backyard flock. Hope you can join us, and we'll see you on Facebook. Have a great day, everybody. God bless. Oh,